The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Are you ready for Barry Ashers and Big Phil Auclair telling you about Premier League? Why a Man City like Roy Hodgson? Both live in a shed in Croydon. Yes, and both have problems with ours. Swansea, meantime, have no problems with the ours as Swans break Arsenal while Burnley break Duck. Harry Kane and co. fail to blow Stoke away, and nothing remotely funny about fully armed and operational Chelsea as they march on. Abroad, Manuel Neuer, now you're getting silly. Dortmund win game, will Gladbach win it for them? Parma hammered 7-0 by Juventus. Cavani and Ibra, it's war in the big top-of-the-table clash in France, and the Championship in today's Football Weekly. The reassuring rustle of some notes as we embark on another journey into football knowledge with John Ashdown.
Hi there.
Hi, John. Philippe Auclair.
Bonjour.
And Barry Glendenny.
Hello.
Hi, everyone. Great weekend. No, it was a great weekend.
Not for everybody.
Not for everyone. There's always winners and losers in this sport.
I was just listening to a phone-in. I'm not proud to admit it. I was listening to a football phone-in and just so many people are moaning and unhappy. So I went through the league table, and I think of the 20 teams of the Premier League, only five teams have supporters who are actually content.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So
it's a very unscientific poll, but by my reckoning, Chelsea, Southampton, West Ham, Swansea, and Burnley. And Burnley are bottom of the league.
Right. It's all about perspective, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Everyone else. Then there's a few teams like Man U, Everton, say, whose fans are a bit and then, but by and large, the vast majority of teams are just moany and unhappy. Which begs the question, why bother going to football at all? Go and watch a movie instead.
No, you see, I'm not sure about that. It may be people get into football for the same reason that people go and see, for example, horror films, you know, which actively put you in the kind of circumstances in real life you would actually run a million miles from, you know. But maybe people get into football just to have something to complain about.
But there's so many other things you can complain about.
Well, yeah, but football's quite an easily consumable one, you know.
It's very expensive. It's getting increasingly expensive.
Well, that's another thing to complain about, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't get upset about
it. That's why people listen to this pod, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, to say, Jimbo, that's too much whistling in last week's pod. That's right, John. Even the whistling has to stop. Anyway. Right.
Sorry.
No, I think that was a really interesting point, Barry. Very interesting. Chelsea, as you say, their fans are happy.
I'd say they're delighted.
Yeah. You know what? They're my favourites for the title.
Really?
Yeah.
You think they might nick it?
I think they might do it. They had a big win at the weekend away at Anfield, coming back from 1-0 down to take a 2-1 victory. Weirdly, this was closer than last time they met, even though everyone had said that the gulf between the two sides has widened enormously since last season. This was actually closer. Barry?
I think a lot of people were waiting to conclude.
Bring us something for Liverpool fans to smile about.
God, that could be difficult. People were waiting to draw their some people were waiting to draw their conclusions about Brendan Rodgers' team selection in Spain last week until after this Chelsea game. Mm. So having spoken very, very highly of how well that team performed in Madrid, albeit in defeat, which he doesn't seem to have realised they lost the game. He proceeds to drop seven of them.
Yeah. Maybe to keep them for the next round of the Champions League, where their real challenge lies. I don't know.
I don't know, but you know, you can understand him bringing back Gerrard and Sterling, but you know, what has Dejan Lovren done to merit his place in that team ahead of, say, Cole Autour? Cole Autour surely earned a starting berth against Chelsea.
John, you're nodding sagely at that observation.
No, I agree with entirely with Baz. Although I would say that the whole point of playing those players in midweek was because they wouldn't be playing at the weekend. So his decision not to play them this weekend was probably taken before the Real game. So their performances in the Bernabeu was probably irrelevant to him. You know, I don't think.
But
he was
surely, if you're a manager, you have to take stock of every performance. Well,
that,
and
but surely that's the only conclusion we can come to, given given the way that some of those players played, and given the fact they were put out of the team.
Yeah,
he clearly wasn't using that game as kind of a way to judge whether they should be in the starting lineup in the Premier League.
Yeah,
I would agree with that. But Fabio Barini is no world beater, but he did more against Real Madrid than his compatriot Mario Balotelli has done all season. And
fingered Balotelli and Lovren so far, but what about Steven Gerrard? Here's Daniel Taylor tweeting, hate to say it, Steven Gerrard, great player, brilliant career, etc., but that first half might be the worst 45 minutes from him I can remember.
I think that's a little bit severe, harsh, as a matter of fact. Yeah. Well, he hasn't had the greatest of seasons anyway. No. I mean, most of his performances this season have been very much like the one against Chelsea, actually.
Right.
And on the goal, actually, which was actually a superb goal, despite the deflection, if you look at the movement, it's Gerrard pass, Henderson, Sterling, Emre Can. That was a good Liverpool. That was a Liverpool of yore that scored that goal. What you were saying is strange. It's like everything went all right except for the results, which is a strange thing, Barry.
Well, against Real Madrid, you mean?
Well, I mean against Newcastle, against Real Madrid, against Chelsea. I mean, the facts are...
I wouldn't say everything went all right against Real Madrid. I thought they were very lucky. They only lost 1-0. But the fact of the matter is Liverpool haven't been playing well this season. They scored 101 goals last season.
Yep.
At the current rate, they're on course to score 51 this season.
One interesting thing is that if you take away, okay, what if, you take away from the total of goals last season, the 101, 52 goals were scored by Dan Sturridge and Luis Suarez, 10 goals were scored from the penalty spot from Steven Gerrard, out of 13, I think, for the whole campaign. Now, if you see how many goals have you got left, well, 30 odd, and it's basically the tempo that Liverpool is following at the moment. It's as if genuinely Suarez and Sturridge goal had been taken away as almost like an absolute essential fact, you know, basically of the team. And they're left with the rest.
Right.
And I think the best goal scorer after Gerrard from the penalty spot was Owen Goal.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
So they do have a huge problem.
Well, the facts of the matter are that Chelsea are now 4 points clear of their nearest rival, which is Saints, and 8 points of the nearest of the kind of the big so-called title challengers, who are Man City, who, much as predicted on this very podcast last Thursday, managed to get themselves into trouble at Loftus Road, 2-2 there. And again, they were fairly lucky to even get a point.
They were very lucky.
Because QPR scored all sorts of goals that the referee deemed fit to not give. One of the players were off.
Rightly so.
Wait, rightly and wrongly. I mean, rightly by the letter of the law, Philippe. But I'd say
the letter of the law.
By the letter of the law, but
surely
the law's an
ass.
Surely, in the case of Joe Hart's,
is it some kind of anarchist statement?
No,
it's
not.
Make
all right.
Our laws.
Okay, the one where the QPR player was offside, fair dues.
Yes,
but the one where Joe Hart makes an utter hash of his goal kick and presents it to Charlie Austin, who duly sticks it in the back of the net.
Great
I can
finish.
See absolutely no basis in common sense
apart from Law 13.
In common sense, I said, I didn't mention Law 13, but can you?
No.
If he makes a hash of his goal kick...
Charlie Austin is being punished for Joe Hart's
mistake. It's just wrong.
But they're the laws, so, we must live by them.
There have been a lot of laws over the years that right-thinking people have done something about, and I would say that this is Law 13 of yours, Philippe. It's got to be next
of
to
mine?
Go. Yeah, that okay. You're so fond of. I think it's time for a revolution.
So... I think this long-standing statute
about kicking the ball twice on a free kick...
I know what's going on. You want a revolution because you want the revolution to be televised so you can get the job presenting it.
I wouldn't mind that, actually. I'm free Wednesdays, FA. But, you know, I mean, you agree with me, John.
So what you're saying, so from any free kick situation...
I'm just saying...
You can just kick the ball to yourself?
If you make the error, then you should be punished for it, yeah? But if you make an error which leads to the opponent scoring, then why should the opponents be punished for it? It's your error.
But there's not even a free...
It's such a thing as an... sorry, everybody. What's the whole concept of advantage in football?
But there's no advantage because there's no foul.
If you do... The concept of advantage is a very fundamental one. If you do something wrong against the laws of the game,
okay,
there's no point in blowing for a free kick or anything like that if it's denying the advantage that your opponents get from
it. Absolutely correct.
So why doesn't that stand in this case here?
Because there is no free kick.
There doesn't need to be.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, I'll calm down now.
Anyway, even without those
even
goals,
without that,
QPR certainly deserved to take more than a single point from that meeting. Mm. We all agreed on that.
Right.
We can only speculate, but if Chelsea and Manchester City swap managers just right now,
right,
who would win the league?
If who, sorry?
Chelsea and Manchester City swap managers right now, who do you think would win the league?
Mourinho would be spotting Pellegrini 8 points.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
I think Pellegrini could stay 8 points ahead with that Chelsea squad.
See, I still think Mourinho would win it with City.
Mm.
But it's just...
That's a game to play at home, listeners.
The thing is that you don't get the feeling from listening to Pellegrini that he has any idea what exactly is wrong in his squad. I think he actually used the words, those very words, I do not understand why,
right,
after the Champions League game.
I just think that Chelsea team is... It's one of those sides that now can just, you know, they could just run on without a manager and wouldn't have any problems at all. But
as they did after Jose Mourinho left, as a matter of fact.
Well, while they win and QPR almost win, there's problems for other London sides, Spurs and Arsenal. Spurs going down 2-1 at White Hart Lane to Stoke. They've now lost, I think, 4 of their last 5 at home. Boy, that pitch really is a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's not just the 4 defeats as much as the teams that they've lost to at White Hart Lane as well. It's not like they've been taking on all the big boys there.
Which teams? Tell us, John.
Well, Newcastle have won there. Stoke have won there.
What?
This current Liverpool side have won there.
Stop.
And West Brom.
No way.
So it's, you know, those kind of defeats are really difficult, I think, for fans of big teams, which Tottenham are. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
You know, I think that's
Is there a common link between those defeats? Is there something you can say that's not working at Spurs?
I think there's a common link, which is the fact that 4 of these defeats have happened on the back of playing it away in Europe, or playing in Europe on the Thursday.
Right.
4 of these defeats, yes.
Well...
Which, you know, they you would imagine that they're capable of playing both competitions, especially the group, the Europa League group that they're in is not exactly the toughest to qualify from, perhaps.
No. Maybe not. I know you're not a fan of locker room speculation, Barry, but it did seem to be a growing tide of dissent, a rising grumbling from the Spurs players in that Stoke match. Adebayor seemed to be having a bit of a go, and there was some lip reading of... No.
Another fella you'd be better off getting rid of, I think. But Pochettino's methods of going about his business are, you know, it's hard work. It involves a lot of effort, sweat, training, and I think there's a lot of players in Spurs' locker room, as you call it, that aren't prepared to put in that kind of effort.
Mm.
They also have an appalling defence at the moment. Fazio hasn't, well, he's only new, but he's not looking great so far. Danny Rose has regressed. Yunus Kabul isn't playing well, and he's a captain, so he's sort of undroppable at the moment. And Nocton isn't doing very well either, so...
Nice to see young Bojan doing well, though, eh?
I suppose we're falling into the trap now of we don't credit the teams who win because they're less fashionable. But he started well in pre-season, I think, and then wasn't doing so well and got dropped, and now he seems to be up to speed. Well, according to Mark Hughes, he is, and Mark Hughes seems certain he's going to get lots of goals.
Oh.
Do you know, by the way, that Stoke... still have, despite Bojan, the tallest team in world football.
Who is, sorry?
Stoke.
Is the tallest team in world football?
Team. Do you know what's the average height of a Stoke first 11 when Crouchy is playing?
Wow, go on.
1.88 meters.
What's that in old money?
That's 6'2.5".
That's a crazy average. When you think that Bojan not being in the starting lineup generally helps that average.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's a world title that they've held for a while, and they kept it this season, despite of people saying Mark Hughes is moving this team from the old-fashioned battering ram of Stoke. And
They're still freakishly tall. That's interesting.
Freakishly tall,
What about Arsenal and their crew of pixies?
They're among the smallest, yes.
Yeah.
The smallest.
And what on earth happened there?
Oh, I think we exactly all know what happened against Anderlecht and what has been happening with What's the word?
All right. I raise a concerned hand about Arsene Wenger's state of mind. First of all, he made that bizarre comment ahead of the weekend where he said, if I say to you, no, the objective is not to win the title, then I have to commit suicide when I go out with you. And then he now comes out and says the objective is not to win the title because Chelsea can't be beat.
Maybe it was Wenger's ghost speaking.
Well, maybe. I mean, it's just like a really strange turn of phrase. But then he does things like, well, all right, leaving Callum Chambers out there against Jefferson Marino, that clearly wasn't going to work. I know you were a fan of Callum Chambers.
I love him, but I don't think
you still love him?
Absolutely.
For what?
For his qualities, for his talent, for his intelligence, for his positioning, for many things, but not as a right back.
Okay.
You've got a boy who is 19 years old who was not even a regular at Southampton last year, and because of injuries and because of the lack of alternatives, and he's been forced in that team to play what is, I think, out of position.
Right.
And there are many people actually around the club who are wondering, why on earth are we playing with Callum Chambers at right back, when Chambers would be far better at centre back,
yes,
and have young Hector Bellerin, who is somebody who is very highly thought of, playing at right back, which is his position.
And absolutely, he's also very quick.
Yes,
well, yes. Sarah Winterburn, an excellent piece in Football 365, making this very point about Bellerin would potentially be much better suited to Jefferson Marino, and then you would have had Callum Chambers potentially in the middle instead of Nacho Monreal when. Bafétimbi Gómez leapt for that winning goal. A great piece. It begins with, can we sub you for a bowl of actual nachos? One of the questions prompted when they did an Ask Monreal Twitter takeover at Arsenal. Brilliant. Yeah. Anyway.
Koscielny injured for another month, by the way.
Oh, sorry? Koscielny,
yeah. He's out for another month.
Wow. But Swansea... injury. Oh, great stuff for them, eh? They're up to fifth now.
Yeah, and they were missing Nathan Dyer, who's one of their best players. And Wayne Routledge was out as well, I think. So Modu Barrow came on made his debut, and it was his scorching run that won them the free kick from which Gilfie scored with his absolutely wonderful free kick.
What a player, eh?
Ah, he's great.
He is, isn't he? What about Aaron Ramsey?
He's exactly the kind of player that Tottenham could do with.
What about Aaron Ramsey?
He's simply not at the same level.
Why is that?
I think it has to be, I think it's the physical state of this Arsenal team is just plain wrong.
Right,
I can't imagine, you know, his talent hasn't deserted him like that. I know some people are saying, well, he had this magnificent... purple patch, and actually this purple patch doesn't represent what he actually can do on a football pitch. He's not as good as people have been saying. Well, it might not be, but he's not as bad as what we've seen since the beginning of the season, really.
Paul Merson, who I'm very fond of, but he doesn't talk a great deal of sense. But last week he described Arsenal's capitulation against Anderlecht, said they were defensively inept, and Arsene Wenger, by way, when it was put to Arsene Wenger that Merson had said this, was very, quite rude, actually. He didn't just dismiss him, he sort of personally attacked him a bit. But does he genuinely believe that what they're doing isn't tactically inept, or is he just...
What does Wenger genuinely believe there, Philippe?
I don't know anymore. Honestly, no, I don't know anymore, because what is very difficult to comprehend is that last season they had a lot of trouble creating chances. They didn't score an awful lot of goals. But the one thing that you could say that where there had been improvement was the fact that the team defensively looked much more solid than the previous season. And it had to do with the fact that Koscielny and Mertesacker were playing together every single game. But they looked more together as a defensive unit. And after starting the season where they were conceding on every single dead ball situation, they'd improved dramatically in that department. And it seems that they've regressed. They've got back to exactly the same old defaults. When I say defaults, it's a French word, of course, default. It's a... yes.
Huh.
Yeah. But I mean, it's also a default setting, as a matter of fact.
It's worth bearing in mind, it's only their second defeat of the season, but it's a recurring
in
theme.
In the Premier League.
It's a recurring theme now. We just have the same conversation about Arsenal every couple of weeks.
Well, I just think, we were talking about swapping managers between clubs earlier on, but if you swap Chelsea's back five with that of City or Arsenal or even United, you'd make wherever that back five was the title favourites, because they're so much better than the defensive units at the other teams. That's been the...
What if you swapped Southampton back five? What if you swapped Southampton back five?
Yeah.
I mean, they've only conceded five in 11, which is, with the exception, I think, of Bayern, the best defensive record in any league.
And Juventus.
Juventus, is it five?
Bayern and Juventus, the only two teams in Europe with a better record.
Okay, well, that's pretty decent, isn't it?
Yeah. Certainly is. Anyway, I think producer Ben has had enough of part one. He feels we should play a little bit of music and then hit you hard with a bit of Euro talk, actually, Philippe.
The festive season is fast approaching. So this year, while you're busy buying gifts for friends and family, why not treat yourself too? This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the simple yet powerful all-in-one website building platform. With Squarespace, you can easily create your own website for your small business, online store, professional portfolio, or blog. It's simple, and it'll be the one gift you know you won't want to return. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code GUARDIAN to get 10% off.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
People, we are live in London at the start of December. What is it, the 3rd of December? 3rd of December, live in London. Details on our page, where you can also find a link to vote for this or any podcast or radio show that you might feel has been the best in the past year. Anyway, also, if you could send in some questions for Thursday, that'd be great, because it's an international weekend. So if there's anything you really want us to talk about, who's in on Thursday? Producer Ben, Barry, Ian McIntosh, Simon Burnton, and Owen Gibson. So you can make, they can be proper questions and all. Fantastic. Anyway, now, time to talk about Euro stuff. Now, Philippe, we've got so much Euro stuff to talk about. So we're going to have to be quite tough on ourselves, quite strict editorially. But we've got to begin with Le Classique Sunday night. What a clash.
It was good,
at the Parc des Princes.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was good. A bit odd, though. I mean...
Well, the referee came up with this extraordinary red card that arguably killed off Marseille's chances of coming back from the goal they'd conceded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was not a red card. No. It was ridiculous. We all agreed on that. But what we probably also are agreed is that in terms of the quality of the football that was played, I think that Marseille probably shaded it.
Well, Marseille had been running away with things, and they've started a little bit of late.
Yeah, people have started to... starting saying, well, that's it, the Bielsa effect, blah, 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 the players are a little bit tired and so forth. When there's a couple of players missing...
The Bielsa bubble, you might say.
Hasn't burst, but
no, it hasn't burst,
but it's not floating quite as high. They're still top of the league.
They're still top of the league. PSG, 1 point behind them, and 1 point behind them are Lyon.
Yes, that is, I think, the best piece of news for Ligue 1, as a matter of fact. Yeah, no, honestly, because we knew that it was going to be interesting with Bielsa and this new Marseille. But I don't think people were quite expecting Lyon to kick back as they have done.
Have they taken on proper teams?
Five wins?
Or is it just easy fixtures?
No, not necessarily. They played Marseille, as you can remember.
That's true.
It's five wins on the trot. Lacazette is on fire, scored another one, and is now top of the hot shots in Ligue 1. You've got, the young, it's a very young team. It's a manager, Fournier, whom nobody really knew. What he was going to achieve at this level, because after us, it's a bit different. And you see a Lyon team that produces very good football and five wins on the trot, and only 2 points behind Marseille and 1 point behind PSG.
Fournier's got Lyon cooking. Is Fournier oven in French?
No, that's not bad.
Okay.
That's not bad.
We'll take that one. Okay. What I also wanted to ask you about was what on earth's going on between Ibrahimovic and Cavani. Now, Ibra had been out for 6 weeks with an Achilles problem. He comes back in about 20 minutes to go.
66 minutes, I think.
There was an extraordinary sequence of PSG attacks in which Ibra would be breaking forward. Cavani makes a run and gets free. Ibra looks at him and then does anything possible other than pass to here. So he dribbles around a bit and he looks up and Cavani's still free. All right, well, I'll pass in the opposite direction and lose the ball. And it happened time after about three or four times in the space of about 5 minutes. It's clear that there's a major issue between those two. And given the way that the politics works at PSG, i.e. Ibra and Ibra's buddies kind of rule the roost.
They basically rule the roost, yes.
So does that mean that Cavani's going to be making his way out very, very shortly?
Well, he hasn't been exactly. People were expecting from him to really take off when Zlatan was injured. You know, he was injured in September, wasn't he? So quite a long time ago. And what we've seen in the meantime, I mean, there have been flashes here and there, few goals, but not many. And basically people are asking, well, is that guy really worth over 60 million euros? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, no, not really. And there have been rumours of his being on the way out for quite a long time.
Where do you think he'll go?
I don't know who would pay the amount of money that PSG is expecting for him. I really have no idea, to be honest, because on what he's shown over recent months, and perhaps longer than that, if you want to get your money back, I mean, who would pay 50 million quid for Edinson Cavani at the moment? No, it's been a major disappointment, and I think it's a way of Zlatan to tell him, you know, I don't trust you. Mm. I don't think you're punching your weight really in that team. I'm back, and I'm the boss. Oui. So, yeah, and, you know, PSG will have to look. There's so many rumours already flying around for possible recruits, be it in January or next year. And as we know, with the FFP restrictions, they're going to have to sell to recruit. Mm. And since the recruits that they are said to have in mind will cost an awful lot of money, that means a couple of players will have to make way.
Throw us a saucy name our way.
I mean,
who do you think might go there?
I mean, the two of the names that come back with insistence are Yaya Touré and Eden Hazard.
Ah.
Yeah. And there was, in the case of Hazard, there were a number of people who genuinely thought that he would already join them last summer.
Wow.
And Touré as well, there were quite a few rumours, and coming from people who are generally decently informed.
Hmm? Okay,
so
good.
They would cost a lot of cash, so you would have to, you would imagine Lavezzi and Cavani would be the two making way.
Right. I see Louis van Gaal snapping up Cavani then. Yeah. Anyway, on that bombshell, let's move on to Italy, where top of the table, Juventus took on Parma, who'd just beaten Inter 2-0, and they absolutely smashed them.
Funnily put it.
Oh, thank you. Oh, right. Anyway, 7-0 was the scoreline. 7-0.
Parma must have been cheesed off with that.
I think they were. Donadoni, their manager, still their manager, he's been confirmed again today, talking about a fundamental sense of shame and impotence at this result, where they were just taken apart. Allegri, who wasn't everybody's cup of tea when he first arrived in Turin as Juventus manager, particularly because he'd been manager at Milan, then Milan fired him, and so we've got Milan's leftovers, has switched to a Christmas tree formation and was richly rewarded. Pick of the goals was Carlos Tevez's slaloming run. Wasn't the entire length of a pitch, but it wasn't short of it. It's not the kind of thing you normally see from Tevez. He made his way around four or five Parma defenders and then, you know, slotted home. And in Argentina, they're comparing it to Diego Maradona's 1986 effort against England.
Are they comparing it to George Weah's in Italy?
No, nobody mentioned that. One or two people mentioned the original Ronaldo against Compostela.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Parma's defending not the greatest. But there you go. Roma kept up with Juve at the top by beating Torino 3-0. Kevin Strootman making his return after a long time with that cruciate ligament thing. And Napoli are not that far behind Roma now in third place. They won at Fiorentina. Higuain continuing his scoring streak. Now, Inter, not only did they fail to beat Verona at home, they drew 2-2 with them. Verona had a penalty saved by the incredible Handanovic, who's now saved three spot kicks this season. He's faced three spot kicks and he's saved all three of them. He's amazing. Amazing. Anyway, pressure is on the Inter manager, Mazzarri, and the fact that his team got beaten by a side that then lost 7-0 against Juve, it hasn't helped. Up next for him after the international break, it's a whopping game. It's the Milan derby, and they'll be taking on a Rossoneri side who also drew 2-2 at the weekend, interestingly enough. They were away at Sampdoria, though, so that was a little bit more palatable. And that also came with a return to scoring form, Stephen El-Shaarawy.
My gosh.
Yeah, he's finally back on the score sheet.
The Pharaoh.
Yeah.
What about Lazio?
Because they've lost.
I've been to... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Empoli.
Empoli, yeah.
Ooh.
Mm.
I should say,
Macaroni with a terrific goal in that, actually. Yeah.
Given the... In this country, if you've got a city, particularly in places like, I know it doesn't really compare, but sort of Sheffield, when if both teams are struggling, or in Bristol, if both teams are struggling, people talk about, oh, it's time for a merger, so we've got one good club at the towards the top.
No, no one, I don't think anyone...
ever come up in Milan?
No. No. The other thing I should mention about Inter's defeat was that it once again featured a goal that was almost entirely the responsibility of Nemanja Vidic. He's having a nightmare. This time it was he was basically marking Luca Toni, who scored Verona's opener. And Luca Toni is not what you'd call...
How old is he now?
Oh, 30... I would say 37, but it might be more. You know, he maybe wasn't the fastest in the first place, but he certainly isn't now, but he still managed to lose Vidic. Anyway, that's enough about Serie A, frankly. Oh, Germany. Wow. Yeah. Bayern Munich. This time it was Frankfurt, and it was a 4-0 scoreline for a Pep's side. A hat-trick from Thomas Müller. And also, did you see the little... Did you see Manuel Neuer, the goalkeeper? Midway through, I think this is in the second half, he gets bored, so somebody passes back to him, and instead of collecting or just clearing it, he does basically a backheel volley. Successfully. Standing in front of his own goal, he backheel volleys it back to the other side of the pitch to where another Bayern defender is. And it was just extraordinary. He's apparently getting so bored now that he has to invent these things for him to do, which I think is a little bit of a problem, you know. When your goalkeeper starts getting bored, you get... I mean, the comparison of Artur Boric against Arsenal when he decided to come out and do a Cruyff turn that time, and with predictably hilarious consequences.
But Boric is not because he was bored. That's what Boric always does.
Oh, okay. Mm. But Neuer this season, because he's got nothing to do, he's beginning to do this. There was another time when he came out dribbling and made it almost to the halfway line, then fell over and had to handball.
But I don't know how do you combat that? Do you give him a little sort of stash of puzzles to play with in his goal? A Rubik's Cube and a jigsaw?
I don't know. It's a very good question.
What if you swap Mourinho for Guardiola? Well, they'd still be top of the league.
What if you swap Mourinho for Manuel Neuer? Because didn't Sid say Mourinho likes to go on goals during...
He
used to go on goal during the Real Madrid media.
Oh, does he?
Christmas game or
whatever. All right. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. The other thing we should mention from the Bundesliga is Borussia Dortmund, who...
At long last.
Yeah, they finally got a win. They'd actually dropped to the last place in the Bundesliga, which is just bonkers, really, before this game on Sunday afternoon when they took on Borussia Mönchengladbach. Gladbach, by contrast, had gone their entire season so far without being defeated. 18 games undefeated. They take on crisis club Dortmund, and guess what happens, John Ashton?
Did they lose?
Yeah, they did. They did. But they, to be fair, actually did all the scoring. I mean, there was only one goal, and it was an extraordinary own goal. It was Christoph Kramer, the guy who got... Mm-hmm. He was the one who got knocked on his head, wasn't he, in the World Cup?
Yeah, right.
He did one of those kind of long back passes to the keeper, little suspecting that the keeper was about 15 yards out, and so it just sailed over his head. And everyone at the Westfalenstadion jumped up and down, and... That was great.
But thing is that it's a little bit misleading when we talk about bottom of the league in the bully, because if you look, the Augsburg, which is seventh in the league, is only 6 points ahead of Stuttgart, who are bottom. So one win, suddenly you jump 3, 4, 5, 6 places. And but
it's
even then,
tight.
It's quite bizarre. It's a team that is as a Janus.
Right. Absolutely.
Two faces.
Yes.
In Europe, absolutely magnificent.
Absolutely.
And in the Bundesliga, absolutely crap.
But you said it, Philippe. You said it. All right.
There's a funny thing we haven't mentioned about French football.
Oh, what's that?
It's the fact that Kurzawa, you know, the Monaco player, who's very talented, has been called by Deschamps because Tremolinas is injured for the two friendlies that we're playing against Albania and against Sweden, against Zlatan. And so Kurzawa has been brought back in the fold, which is a surprise a few people. Because you might remember that little story when France, the under-21s, played against Sweden.
Yep.
And Kurzawa very cleverly...
Saluted them.
Saluted, military salute.
Yep.
When the score was only 3-1.
Yep.
Saying, hey, now we're going through. And then John Guidetti, I think, scored the fourth goal for the Swedes and... did the same thing, the same salute, and Kurzawa was absolutely slaughtered in France for being so stupid as to provoke the Swedes, and France paying a high price for it that is not taking part
in
the Euros.
So he's in the squad when they take on the senior Swedish side.
Exactly, for which Guidetti has been actually called as well. Sweet.
All right, now that's an international I'm looking forward to. Very tight then in Le Championnat, Philippe, but not quite as tight as it is. I'm thinking, John... In the championship.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm right in saying there's 15 points covering 23 of the 24 teams.
Wow. Or 5 points covering 9 of them.
Yeah, if you want to look at it that way. Only poor old Blackpool down at the bottom, cut adrift.
Really?
But it's classic championship stuff. It's incredibly competitive.
Yep.
Few teams looking like they're going to, you know, run away with it or anything like that. Derby looking extremely good, were really, really good at the weekend. They hammered Wolves 5-0.
Right. Steve McLaren's Derby.
Yeah, and you know, his record, we ought to sort of just take a moment to, mm-hmm. to point out just how good he's been since taking over there. He's averaging over 2 points a game, and that's over 61 games
wow.
that he's been there. And it's been sort of brought up a little bit with the Moyes sort of Sociedad stuff that, you know, how he could go and do a McLaren by, you know, essentially going to Europe and rebuilding your career. But sometimes it's forgotten that McLaren had a pretty dire time at Wolfsburg, followed by an even worse time at Nottingham Forest. And so his stock wasn't massively high. He didn't go from winning the championship in Holland to rocking up at Derby and winning all these matches. You know,
right.
You know, he was rebuilding, you know, when he got there. And he's done an absolutely fantastic job with a group of players that, you know, aren't necessarily his. You know, a lot of them were brought in under Nigel Clough in the years preceding McLaren taking over. And I think that has helped because you've got a decent link between the players that are there and the fans. You know, the fans have got time to get to know the characters. And there's a real sense of kind of togetherness about the club. And obviously, they could have gone up last season when they just missed out. And, yeah, they're well placed to do it this year instead.
Right. Well, Bournemouth are dropping to second place as their six-game winning run came to an end. They drew 0-0 with Borough.
Yeah.
What about Ipswich and their £10,000 quad, John? That's all they cost.
Yeah, they had a really good win at the weekend over Watford. A team, you know, that we haven't really mentioned in the pod is Middlesbrough, who've
Ooh.
I think nobody at the start of the season would have predicted them being third in the league. They would have gone top if they'd won at the weekend. Aitor Karanka's been there almost exactly a year now, and he's done a fantastic job with, you know, fairly limited resources and, you know, a couple of youngsters, you know, coming through the ranks, as always seems to happen at Middlesbrough. And he's got them in the hunt. I mean, you know, with the championship, who knows, they might finish
long way to go,
15th,
no.
yeah, but,
yeah.
you know.
All right. Okay. Hey, there was also the FA Cup, which saw round one this weekend, featuring League One and League Two teams, and also sides from the Evo Bostic, Evo Stick.
Yeah, well, the lowest.
Vanarama.
The lowest placed team in the first round
yeah.
is now the lowest placed team in the second round because Warrington Town of the Northern Premier Division One.
That's a disappointing name. I was hoping something a little bit more silly.
I think they are sponsored by Evo Stick.
Oh, are they? Is that the Evo Stick?
Yeah, Northern yeah. Premier Division 1. That's the eighth tier of English football.
Right.
So four tiers below even League 2. Mm. They were taken on Exeter, who were 100 places above them in the league, and won 1-0 on Friday night.
Was that the upset of the weekend, John?
Well, there were a few.
Ah.
Blyth Spartans.
Oh, I like them.
Went through. They beat Altrincham.
Good stuff.
I think. And what was the other one?
Worcester.
Oh, yeah. Worcester City beat Coventry in yeah. Coventry.
In Coventry.
I had to write an article, sort of a TV review of BBC did a final score special yesterday, FA Cup. You know, so it was a 2-hour slot before Songs of Praise. So it was Jason Muhammad presenting Kevin Kilbane, Jason Roberts with the pundits. And then they were, rather than show one game live, I think. It's one of those things you're kind of duty bound to show, but
yeah.
no one's really that interested apart right. from supporters of the teams involved. And obviously you've got Premier League games on and Sky at the same time. But I thought they did a really good job.
Okay.
It was entertaining.
Good.
And Kevin Kilbane, our old chum, he'd a good candidate for Coleman balls in Private Eye, where he spoke of some striker pulling off his central defender. He was
right.
full of praise for that.
Yes. Poor old Kevin, eh? He didn't mean, actually. He meant in a football sense.
Yes.
All right, okay. Right. I tell you what we haven't done is Spanish news. Sid's absence is continuing on the pod because we're holding him back now. Having waited this long, we've decided to wait until Thursday when A, we'll know if David Moyes is taking over at Real Sociedad, and B, we won't have anything else to talk about. And C,
I thought Thursday is going to be an Ireland or a Scotland Ireland special.
Yeah, that's true. It is going to be a Scotland Ireland special, and Sid, and he can also tell us about Jack Harper, who's potentially a Scotland player, but potentially a Spanish player. He's the amazing wonder kid, Scottish wonder kid at Real Madrid. He can also. Did you see Toni Kroos's goal for Real Madrid? They beat Rayo Vallecano 5-1. And it was brilliant. Gareth Bale was back and he scored, but Cruz's goal was just ridiculous. It was, I saw it described as a billiard shot, but it was more of a trick shot. It doesn't matter. It was, you know, along the ground, but the amount of curve it had on it, it was Very good. And then Suarez came off the bench and set up both goals for Barcelona, who managed to come from behind against Almeria. And other stuff that Sid will tell us about on Thursday. But Barry, you had something you wanted to mention about Spanish football.
Yeah, I just saw a Vine on Twitter of a weird exchange between Gerard Piqué, who is apparent, well, we don't know, there's rumours going around that he's unsettled at Barcelona, and his manager Luis Enrique, where the Barcelona were making their final substitution. They brought on Xavi and I don't know who came off, but Gerard Piqué had been warming up and realised, well, I'm not going to get a game now, so he wandered back over to take his seat in the dugout, and Luis Enrique sort of, oi, you, and Piqué looked around and he sort of gestured to him to continue warming up down the touchline, which seemed rather odd.
It does, doesn't it?
There was also an exchange between Piqué and one of his teammates on the subs bench, wasn't there, where he complained, he was caught by the microphones and basically complaining about the fact that he wasn't given the proper chance at the club at the moment.
All right.
Yeah. And obviously, I mean, there are loads of people in Spain who are convinced that Piqué is on his way out and probably to the Premier League. That's what they say in Spain.
Coming back.
Why not?
Why not, indeed?
I mean, Alexis did it. Fabregas did it.
Mm.
Didn't All hurt right. them, did it?
Certainly didn't.
Yep.
Barry, what's happening in Scotland?
Well, Celtic beat Aberdeen, and Celtic manager Ronnie Dyla described the sensation of beating Aberdeen as being better than sex, which would suggest... I've never beaten Aberdeen at anything, but...
It must be pretty good.
Or else... Mrs. Dyla, if there is one, needs to up her game.
That's a very silly thing to say. Why would you say something like that?
I mean, or Ronnie Dyla?
No, sorry. Ronnie Dyla. He's, Norwegian?
Yes.
Yeah, and perhaps he didn't, maybe it's something that people say in Norway. Oh, that cup of coffee was... that's my Norwegian. Oh, that cup of coffee
it's
was
remarkably
better than
the similar to your Arsene Wenger.
Yeah, he's... So I'm surprised at that, but he had every right to be excited because they're on top of the Scottish League for the first time this season.
And they've been drawn against Rangers in the Cup.
They have, and people were saying, why didn't you mention that on your
podcast?
Because
we don't care.
Well, I don't know.
And it was 10-11, wasn't it? It was 10-11. Scott Brown had been sent off.
Wow, you've gone way beyond the boundaries of our knowledge on this one.
Is it Scott Brown who's been linked with the move to Crystal Palace for $5 million?
Wow.
Wow, look at you. Oh, did you do rumour mill this morning?
Yeah.
All right, what else was in there, Barry?
Some Basque centre-half called...
Laporte.
Who plays for... He's the only the second Frenchman ever to play for Athletic Bilbao, 20-year-old.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Who was the first one? Quiz question.
Vicente Lizarazu.
Thank you.
Well, good knowledge. Anyways, yeah.
Yeah, he's being linked with a move to Manchester United. He seems to be right.
What position is he?
He's centre-half, but he can also play left-back.
Okay.
He's only 20.
All right. Anything else?
Nah, nothing really. Slim pickings this morning. Right. It always is on a Monday.
Okay. Let's talk then about Saints, who are second in the table. Before the weekend, we talked about how this was the point of last season where the wheels came off a bit for Southampton. No signs of that happening right now. A 2-0 victory over Leicester, who didn't manage a single shot on target, I don't think. All very good, no? Shane Long?
I didn't really see this.
No.
Shane Long scored two splendid goals.
Appeared to biff one of the Leicester defenders while celebrating it.
Well.
Yeah.
He's just an Irish country boy. You could expect a kind of agricultural celebration.
Right.
But I was looking today. I'm trying to sort of figure out how Southampton are so good. But I was just going back, rereading when I went to Ronald Koeman's first press conference. I think it was, his first press conference since his appointment.
Mm-hmm.
I think before they got their season underway. And he was remarkably confident that they'd do okay. And in the beginning of August as well, their chairman, Ralph Kruger, insisted in an interview and was widely ridiculed, it has to be said, that he insisted that Southampton were always in control of what was going on there with players going out, players coming in. And he said it would have been insane to try and keep too many players who didn't want to leave, but they drew the line at, say, Schedderlin and J. Rodriguez.
Mm.
And he said, our goal is to finish the transfer window where you can say, actually, they've got a plus now, they've got a stronger team than they were before. And he was mocked at the time, but he's proved to be correct.
Where's he from, Mr. Kruger?
He's Canadian, I think.
Is he? Canadian, he's German. But he was German, but he's Canadian. And he was the coach of the Edmonton Oilers.
Oh, that's right, yeah. And a lot of people went...
Yeah,
he knows
nothing. Who's this Canadian joker?
The one person who has been instrumental, I think, is Les Reed, has played a huge role in what's happened. And it's very interesting because they're starting now to talk how they had prepared the succession, because they knew that there was something was going to happen with Pochettino. Mm-hmm. And they'd drawn up a short list of six managers quite early on. Actually, I was told January.
Hmm.
And Koeman was always number one in the list. And also, which is very interesting, at least two of the players that Koeman brought to the club, i.e. Tadic from FC Twente and Gazzanopelle from his own Feyenoord, were also players who had been scouted by Southampton before Koeman was appointed. So when he arrived and he said, I'd like those two, they said, yeah, absolutely, we agree with you. And because, for example, the thinking behind it is Gazzanopelle is like a younger and perhaps better version of Ricky Lambert. So if Lambert goes, fine, no problem. We've got somebody who is 29, who has scored back full of goals in the Eredivisie and can do a very good job for us. So it's absolutely, I must say, magnificent example of how to manage a football club. When you remember what we all said about 5-6 months ago, I think it's time to eat a little bit of humble pie.
Very much so. They're 7 points clear of fifth-placed Swansea. Anyway, Manchester United, who got a win and a clean sheet against Crystal Palace. Di Maria, though, the storyline here seems to be Di Maria has been losing his sparkle a little bit of late, gets taken off by Van Gaal, who puts on Mata, who promptly, boom, almost immediately, scores the winner.
Yeah. Well, is that surprising that the players physically drops a little bit after...
I suppose not. Anyway,
I noticed, by the way, the close resemblance between Angel Di Maria and Franz Kafka was pointed out to me by Wilson. Right. And I looked at it.
Obviously.
And I looked at it and I thought, this is extraordinary. He looks.
Yeah, you two had
looks
a,
like Franz
you
Kafka.
You chuckled together, didn't you, over that
yeah.
one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I don't know what Kafka looks like.
No, I don't know what Kafka
really?
Looks like.
Really? Well, it looks like Angel Di Maria. Really.
I always fancied Kafka looking like Jonathan Wilson, to be honest. But he doesn't.
No, not quite. No.
Okay.
No, not quite.
Yeah. Supporters of other Premier League clubs, apologies that we haven't as yet found time in our busy schedule to actually talk about your game. But here's some of them. West Ham Villa, that was 0-0. People talking on this Monday about Villa turning the corner with that result.
What?
I know.
Well, they lost 5 on a spin.
I suppose that's true.
You know, anything is better than another defeat.
Would you apply the same logic to Sunderland, 1-1 draw with Everton?
I didn't see any of this, but from what I've heard, either team could have won it. And
Sunderland could have finished in 9, says Everton's Roberto Martinez, in the sense that they could have finished with 9 men.
Oh, right. Yeah. I'll take his word
for it. You'll have to listen to another podcast to get opinions on that, because I didn't see that one either. Do you see that one, John?
No, afraid not.
No, Philippe?
I gave it to Miss, I'm afraid.
All right, there you go.
We'll get pelters for that. How dare you not watch every football match that was played all over Europe this weekend?
Well... Burnley, how about Burnley? They're now only 2 points from safety. They got a win. Ashley Barnes scoring that one.
It's great to see them get the win, and that winner came from across from their fullback Kieran Trippier. It was a huge source of their assists last season. I think he got some astronomical, nearly 20 assists last season.
I think 24.
But he hasn't got forward much this season, hence the sort of dried up, but I think you get a few more out of that.
Right. Wasn't he regarded, and turning to John for that, as perhaps the best player in the Championship last season?
Certainly the best fullback in the Championship last year, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think he may well have even led the sort of assist charts. Yeah.
Well, certainly if he's getting his astronomical numbers, very possibly. Wow, cool. What's up with Hull?
Yeah, it's been a funny old season for Hull. I kind of wonder how Hull supporters are feeling, given... You know, it was supposed to be, you know, they're in the start of the season in Europe, had a few new exciting players had come in. You know, they were thinking, oh, we're not going to go down, we're going to be a fun team, we're going to have a bit of a European adventure. And Bruce essentially sacrificed Europe to kind of concentrate on the league, which I think fans would have accepted if they weren't in 15th and had only won once since the opening day.
Well, he was the big success, one of the big success stories of last season, as you say, and those dark times at say, for example, Sunderland seem well past him. But is this reverting to the norm for Steve?
Possibly. There's sort of a Steve Bruce cycle where he does quite well up to a point.
Spends a lot of money
and then goes over a cliff.
Ooh.
And who's to say that?
He hasn't spent a lot of money with Hull.
He has in the last transfer window.
He spent more than, Inter, Juventus and Milan put together.
In net transfers, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
But it's kind of, it's a little bit like we were saying earlier about the sort of clubs being happy. Happiness is relative to expectancy, isn't it? And after last season, Hull's expectancy has gone up.
Yep.
And it's just not been matched by performances.
Absolutely not. They're only 2 points from the drop now. 2 points from the drop. I'm looking for Newcastle. I think Newcastle are not in the bottom half of the table. They moved up to eighth place.
Yeah.
5 straight victories, the latest at West Brom. And this one was never in doubt. From the moment that Perez did that extraordinary back heel flick, Magpies were all over this one. They plucked him from obscurity or Tenerife reserves. Yep. Where he was, producer Ben insists, earning only €600 a week. Which, yeah, you know, in Tenerife might get you a long way. I don't know. But I would have to imagine he's on substantially more now.
I'd say with the current rate of unemployment among Spanish youngsters, that's probably quite a good wage.
All right. There you go. A little bit of perspective, Barry.
It must be very confusing being a Newcastle fan at the moment. You hate your chairman, you want your manager out, and he's just won 5 games in a row.
Well, here's a Newcastle fan for you. Toon, you know, long of this parish, who says, I'll be staggered if this purple patch lasts much longer into November, as once Pardew has options to pick his team, he'll mess it up again. Ashley will probably offload Chiote and another in January, so I take middle table now and all efforts in the cups, please. Pardew still out, says Toon, but perhaps with a bit more optimism in. Well, that's the situation as we head into another international break. Just 4 points separating Spurs in 12th place from near neighbours West Ham in 4th place. So it is still very tight, still very fluid, but here we are. What is it now? 11 games into the season, still not a single Premier League manager has been shown the door. John, is that a record for the Premier League?
I don't know.
It seems kind of a long time,
doesn't it?
Yeah. Pardew was the out-and-out favourite, but I think there's now 13 or 14 managers more likely, according to the bookies, to go before him.
Who do you think would be first?
Wow, that...
Pellegrini?
Pellegrini, I think you'd make a case for.
Pellegrini, Lambert and...
Lambert, yeah, that's a good shot.
Bruce are probably the three you feel most... It's the first time
Renty Lerner isn't somebody who wants... He wants to get rid of the club, and he's not going to... unless it went really... pear-shaped. Yeah.
Well, if you look,
it is already pear-shaped.
The bottom three are for the first time this season are the three that came up. So you know, managers there have got a bit of, you know, stock in the bag. Palace have not long appointed Warnock, so they're fourth bottom.
What about Arsene Wenger? When's the board going to act?
That's not going to happen.
I'm going to call Warnock.
Oh yeah,
first. Okay. He won't necessarily get sacked.
Yeah.
He may leave, but I reckon he'll be next to go. That's my call.
Interesting, because there is that potential US takeover of the Eagles, and often that brings changes. All right.
Yeah. Okay. But I'd still go Pellegrini.
We would. Okay.
Yeah.
Who would take over, do you think?
I heard some crazy rumor.
Oh, go on. Go on.
I was still Diego Simeone. It was interesting. I suppose you think, what does the team miss lack at the moment?
Cojones.
Who can give cojones to the citizens? The answer is Diego.
Right.
Yeah.
And what?
It's a crazy rumour, please. Yes.
All right. Well, it's the kind we love. Well, that brings us to the end of today's extra special Monday edition. We're back on Thursday with Scotland, Ireland, your questions, Sid Lowe, other stuff probably as well. And we'll look forward, of course, to England. Slovenia?
Yeah.
England, Slovenia. Right. All right, then. That's it for today. Have yourself a splendid week. Many thanks to Jean-Philippe Barry and producer Ben. And au revoir. À bientôt.
The festive season is fast approaching. So this year, while you're busy buying gifts for friends and family, why not treat yourself too? This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the simple yet powerful all-in-one website building platform. With Squarespace, you can easily create your own website for your small business, online store, professional portfolio, or blog.
It's simple, and it'll be the one gift you know you won't want to return. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code GUARDIAN to get 10% off.